Welcome to the Full Trace of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:55 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 14th, and I thought we'd kick off today with the yield curve spread. It's continuing to narrow and is down to -90 basis points, and this is approaching the low from back in February of this year. So it's about as inverted as at any time since 1981, and that alone is a meaningful event. But then I think it's also rather interesting to contrast that with financial conditions. And I noticed that this is the Goldman Sachs measure, and they've put in a lot more back history recently. So we can see that financial conditions tightened up quite considerably all the way through 2022. And that was in direct response both to the big decline in government bond prices, rapidly rising interest rates, and then also the knock-on effect of that on the highly valued portion of the market. And we had weak stock market and bond market activity in simultaneous fashion, which is rather unusual as well. And that really did tighten up financial conditions. It's worth considering, though, that that's about as tight as financial conditions have been at any point in the last 30 years, other than the global financial crisis. And even that is a shade of how tight financial conditions were back in the early 1980s. So, obviously, there is a big difference between now and then, and it is the volume of debt. There's a lot more debt today than there was back in, particularly as a percentage of GDP, as there was back in the early 1980s. So asset prices do tend to be more sensitive to interest rates now, and that is just purely a convexity argument. Now, what we had Jay Powell basically saying today was first that they really do want to get PCE inflation down, and they're willing to do whatever it takes. And that they did pause interest rates today, and that they anticipate raising interest rates again, perhaps two more times by the end of the year, and certainly do not anticipate cutting interest rates this year. So the PCE inflation rate is around 4.7%. It has moderated, but it is not coming down aggressively. And of course, this also then highlights an important point that the kinds of assets that are affected by interest rates have moderated. Those inflationary pressures have moderated. So what we've definitely now seen is this divergence between the CPI X at food and energy, and then the core. There has usually been the more volatile one would have been the one that had the commodities in it, but now that has actually fallen faster than core. So that is a very clear threat that inflationary pressures are becoming entrenched. Now, wage growth is also moderating, but it's not collapsing. So we certainly still have wages growing at in excess of 6%, or I guess around 6%. And that is higher than at any point since the late 1990s. So that's obviously something that is contributing to the perception of inflation. Then there are also strike actions starting. So you have writers in Hollywood striking, and you have the United Automotive Workers beginning to talk about striking too. So that, I think, is something that is really quite important, that we have this background level of inflation that is higher than normal. So the second important thing that Jay Powell had to say today is simple. They're willing to do whatever it takes, and then it was that could potentially be manifested by lower trend growth and higher unemployment. Now, in the best of all possible worlds, that is going to translate into a soft landing where inflationary pressures come down without any meaningful rise in unemployment or growth falling into negative territory. The best of all possible worlds doesn't necessarily happen every time, and the history of soft landings is really frighteningly short. So now let's go back then and think about the yield curve spread, because it is still contracting and financial conditions are easing. So that is helping to support stocks. And then we can think about what happens when it starts to turn around. And it is not usually until we start to see it trending higher that we see the greatest selling pressure. And that was true in 2007 and all the way through 2008, and then equally true in the back half of the year 2000 and into 2001, and then all the way to the lows in 2003. So now the big question is, when this turns around, are we going to see similar negative performance in stocks? Well, one thing I thought was interesting is that the technology sector continues to rally, and but today the S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged. So, pausing around the 4,400 point level, it has taken out the high from back in August of last year, so it has very clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it is overbought in the short term. Even if this is a recovery overall, there is still the potential for some pause of consolidation in here. But even with tighter or with rising interest rates, that did not stop Nvidia from popping on the upside and hitting a new high. So now the price has been hovering here around the trillion valuation, and then it exceeded it in here today. And estimates are for earnings to quadruple by January of 2024. I think that's very ambitious, but certainly there's a lot of enthusiasm around the AI sector overall. Then I continue to read these reviews of the Apple VR product, and I just don't find them to be particularly impressive. I've been playing around with VR for years, and I think that this whole idea that you have to carry a battery around in your pocket, because that's the only way that they could figure out how to reduce the weight of the product, it seems to be incredibly inconvenient. And that was certainly not something that was very clear from the demo that was produced for the release. But nonetheless, Apple was in positive territory today, and it is still holding in the region of the peak. Now, we did have that large downward dynamic a week ago, and the price is pausing here. But as long as that sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact, then this is going to continue to be an uptrend. I'm going to hold on to my puts in Apple, and I do think that it's inevitable that sales will not survive at such elevated levels during a recession. But the reality, of course, is that until we actually start to see much weaker economic growth, then there is going to continue to be a bullish tint to the wider market. And clear downward dynamics would be required to question that. So, Nvidia was certainly a big contributor to the Nasdaq performing rather well in here today. It was up 100 points, closing above the 15,000 level now for the first time in a year. Really quite overbought in the short term, but still trending higher, and quite likely that it will at least test the peaks even. But of course, a downward dynamic would cap the advance for the short term and suggest a period of mean reversion. I think that the risks here, where you have the trend mean at, let's say, 13,000, the price at 15,000, and potential resistance at 16,000, then the rationale for a trade at this point doesn't make sense because your risk is 2,000 points, your reward is 1,000 points. I just don't like those kinds of odds. And then let's think about the oil price. So it rebounded yesterday and then it came off a bit in here today. My gut tells me that the break when it comes is going to be on the downside. But it hasn't happened yet, and the price is very finely balanced. You have the very clear supply and demand arguments, but the fact that it has been ranging in this tight manner suggests that those arguments are in balance. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. When this thing breaks, it's going to break out in a dynamic manner. And I do think that because we have tighter liquidity conditions around the world, then that is going to be a break on the downside. Now, what I find, and I think this, what happens with oil is going to have a big effect on lots of different countries. So Nigeria is devaluing the currency, and they're talking about letting it float freely. Now, I think seeing is believing when it when we talk about freely floating emerging market currencies. But one thing that they will do is that by devaluing the currency, they're going to boost income in Naira. And a lot of the liabilities are paid in Naira. So that is going to help to solve some of the budgetary problems. However, they are going to have to improve governance overall. And a new government with a rather spotty past in terms of corruption isn't exactly confidence-inducing, but the market is reacting to the devaluation of the currency rather well, and the Global X MSCI Nigeria ETF has held a sequence of higher reaction lows for the last 6 months. It has broken the downtrend, and today was a big move on the upside. So investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the new administration that they will do what is necessary to try and get inflation under control. And of course, inflation is running at about 22%, and interest rates are around 12 or 13%. So you've got almost a 10% negative real rate. So they do have a lot of work to do to try and get that inflation measure under control. And then elsewhere in emerging markets, the Nifty index is closing at a new high. So this is still really quite an impressive performance against a background where we've had quite a lot of volatility on developed markets. India has been really quite stable. And of course, the big question for foreign investors is going to be what happens with the rupee, and it is steadying here. Now, if it can push through that 200-day moving average, I think that's going to be a clear bullish catalyst for the Nifty. And it could easily take a leg higher in the event that the currency appreciates. Now, in early trading, the Hong Kong market is in positive territory, and the renminbi is coming up to an area of potential support. So, we've definitely seen evidence of a willingness by Chinese officials to support the currency when it weakens to around the 7.2 area. That's been true in 2019, 20, 22, and now there are rumblings about a stimulus package. And a Chinese stimulus would certainly help to improve the outlook for commodities more generally. Copper prices have rebounded and are pushing up through the 200-day moving average right now. Nickel today was up in quite a dynamic manner, and that is clearly now demonstrating support coming through in the region of that 1,000-day moving average. I did highlight the lithium chart a couple of weeks ago. It collapsed in 22 and has subsequently rebounded. So that is suggesting that a low of at least near-term significance has been found. So we're certainly in an interesting environment in terms of global liquidity. You have Japan, where they are actively attempting to devalue the currency, printing the money necessary. The Nikkei continues to push higher. It was up another 400 points in here today. Now it is becoming progressively more overbought in the short term. So the first clear downward dynamic is likely to signal a peak of near-term significance. And I think that the balance of probabilities is that we will get it up to around the 35,000 level, and then that would be a logical area to anticipate that some resistance would begin to come in. We've seen that at 20,000, 25,000, 30,000. So the logical conclusion is that the next area of potential resistance is going to be around the 35,000 level. And then the Japanese yen was a tiny bit stronger in here today, but in terms of global liquidity, the promise is China, the reality is Japan, and then the Federal Reserve continues to tighten. And not only are they intent on raising rates more, but also the size of the Fed's balance sheet continues to trend lower. And Jerome Powell today was very clear in stating that he anticipates it will continue to contract. Something that I guess one of the primary reasons why I think that there will be a deflationary shock and people will be more concerned about deflation a year from now than they are today is because of the impact that quantitative tightening has had on sentiment. If we cast our minds back to 2019, we had exceptionally low interest rates. People were worried that we were never going to see higher interest rates again, that we had this phenomenally large total of negative yielding debt, which had been sitting out there for years, and people more than willing to pay up to, or basically to pay governments to take their money, all in the hope that the momentum move would persist. But that was all driven by quantitative tightening, that we had this siphoning of money out of the system and then deleveraging as a result. So even though stocks were still firm, quantitative tightening was creating the impression that deflation was more likely than not. And I do think that is exactly what we can anticipate now, that eventually inflationary pressures will peak. That will also coincide with a much lower size to the Fed's balance sheet. Now, of course, it does beg the question when. Well, I do think it's interesting that if we think about not so much the volume, because when the Fed's balance sheet was at 4.5 trillion, it's not quite the same thing as 9 trillion. And then the jump higher from about 2.8 to approximately 4.5 trillion. Well, let's just call that about 1.7 trillion on the upside. And then it unwound about 750 billion of that. So that was not quite half of the amount added retraced, but it wasn't far off it either. So we've seen that about 750 billion has been taken out of the Fed's balance sheet so far. The trend mean is around 7.5. So if it gets down to that level, well, it would have unwound about 40%. Now, if we look at the volume of cash that was added in incrementally, well, it's at least 4.5 if we just simply take the prior peak. So 2.25 would be half. And last time it did not unwind half of the decline. And then subsequently, when they did begin to increase supply again, we had a doubling. So that's where the bets are, that investors are betting right now that the Fed is not serious, that they are not willing to do absolutely anything to get inflation down, and that even if they do get it down, they'll panic eventually and have to massively increase the size of the balance sheet again. And that is the modus operandi of the stock market right now. It is why the stock market remains firm. Now, if one were to take the opinion that the Fed is serious and that it is more likely than not that what they're doing will cause a recession, and that will mitigate some of the inflationary pressures, and that would translate into lower rates in the future, because the 10-year yield is still hovering around 3.8% and was in mildly negative territory in here today. So it does suggest that the Federal Reserve would say that that means that inflationary expectations for the medium to longer term are well anchored. But what it really suggests is that deflation is more likely than inflation, or that deflationary forces are more likely than inflation over that medium term. Now, let's also just look at that Chinese market. So the Hang Seng has been rebounding, and there was a long tail on the candle 3 weeks ago, and it's approaching the region of the 200-day moving average. If it can sustain a move up through 20,000, it will have broken the downtrend that's been in place for the last 6 months. The initial rally off the lows in October of last year, or I guess November, that did break the downtrend. And if this is a higher reaction low, then it will sustain a move up through the 20,000 level. Then let's think about what's happening in the UK. There's a lot of action on the political front, but the pound continues to rally, and it's up to 126.62 now. And I think rather than looking at it versus the dollar, it's perhaps more important to look at how the pound is performing versus the euro. And it has been in this long base formation since 2016, and it is rallying up towards the upper side of that base right now. And eventually, it will break on the upside, but that is going to have to, or at least it will likely coincide with the end of this long period of economic underperformance. And I think the long-term impact of the UK turning from being an energy exporter to an importer. All of the money that was saved from the end of the Cold War was plowed into services. And then the big question is, how are they going to continue to pay for that? Well, where everyone is worried about the cost of paying for pensions, paying for health care for the baby boomer generation. But realistically, that is a problem that will last for approximately 15 years. And then afterwards, it will become progressively better, just simply because the bulge in the population will have died off. So obviously, this is one of the longer-term considerations for lots of countries. But then the reality is that lots of countries without a big swell of young people to replace aging workers are going to have, on average, older populations. So there will be acute phases of problems with paying for upkeep of an older population, and then there will be longer term issues that will come and go as well. But the bigger challenge, of course, is how do you preserve your domestic population and also encourage immigration? And is that possible if you have a multicultural way of thinking? And I think that is something that lots of countries are grappling with right now. Personally, think that multiculturalism doesn't work, and that what it is in fact is a form of racism, and that by telling people that you embrace and value their culture, what you are basically telling them is that their culture is theirs, your culture is yours, and that they shouldn't mix. And that doesn't work well when languages aren't shared, or when people come to a country and don't and find it difficult to fit in. Assimilation is much more effective at creating a homogeneous group of people that are all pointing in the same direction. It's not politically correct, but it is a reality that it creates fewer social issues. And that is something that the UK has been attempting to do. It's something that the USA used to do. And it is something that Europe has failed to do. But immigration and boosting the reproductive capacity of a population is going to be essential if some of these types of issues are going to be dealt with eventually. I guess that is a non-markets way of thinking about things, but it is something that every country is going to have to grapple with. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.